This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Today in the studio we have the world-famous Riley Repko, CEO of Trusted Cyber Solutions. Good morning, Riley. How are you?
Good morning, John. Great to be here.
Hey, I got up early this morning and I typed his name into the Google machine and he's everywhere. I mean, if you look at this guy's background, you just wonder, his resume must be like five or six pages. He's got all these awards, his experiences here, he's been there, he's speaking here, he's speaking there. Maybe he's cloned himself, he's running around, done so much for the last 30 or 40 years in this town in the area of security and in the whole world of cyberspace itself. Thought we'd bring him in. He has just left one position. He's been transitioning into another position. I thought he'd have a good perspective on this whole issue of cybersecurity, and that's what we're going to talk about today. But before we do that, we got to do a little up close and personal. I've kind of teased the audience with your background. Maybe you can share with us some of the highlights, the mountaintops from the last 20, 25 years, Riley.
Well, gosh, talk about putting me on the spot. Well, I spent 25 years in the private sector, but I was fortunate to also balance my career in the Air Force Reserve. So I had my foot in both pots, so to speak. I've always been committed to keeping our nation safe. But it also helped me get the insights of what this aggressive growth, you know, high-tech environment was all about. So whatever I learned there, my goal was to leverage it and share it with my public sector partners.
And I think if you look at what's going on in the world today, you see that government agencies in the United States are getting strapped for money. And they're reaching out and trying to combine. If you just look at Maryland, you know, Montgomery County, they have this Internet County Connector with, guess what? It's a public-private partnership, you know. Before we began the show here, I told you about Vint Cerf. He sat in that chair right there, and he talked about a public-private partnership he was associated with many years ago, which led to, guess what, to the Internet and many other things. And this whole idea of public-private partnership, I'd like to touch on it more because you really do have your finger on both the people who have to report to shareholders and the people who have to report to citizens and to the Obama administration. So it's a tough juggle. Sometimes they can mix. Sometimes they can't mix. And it's good to find out a little bit more about it. Your last position was with the Air Force. And what was your position there, Riley?
I was the senior advisor for cyber transformation and operations. I've reported to basically the chief operating officer for the Air Force. The individual, you know, basically runs plans, you know, requirements and operations for the Air Force. And, you know, they saw it in their wisdom to be able to say, hey, since this domain, this new cyber domain is ultimately the ultimate partnership activity, you know, our goal is to figure out, you know, how do we engage the community that in essence owns, you know, the art of the possible, all these good ideas. Just like you mentioned, John, you talk about this particular domain. I sit back and say, we're talking about an environment today that involves shared risks, shared vulnerability, and why not some type of shared investment way ahead? So I spent the last 28 months looking at how can we, in essence, build a mechanism that reaches into the private sector and supports the warfighter.
And if you try to look at the United States from a detached perspective, you fly in from Mars, you fly in from some other world, you look and say, well, you know, there's the Internet out there. There's also private networks out there. There's transportation networks. There's this thing called the power grid. And, you know, some of these are owned by the government. Some of these are owned by private organizations. Some are mixed. Some are regulated by the government. Some are self-regulated. And I think when you look into the world of cyberspace and security, all of a sudden there's some parallels there, but the regulations don't seem to do this. And by the way, this isn't like moving a railroad track. These threats in the cyber world are constantly moving and changing and bobbing and weaving. And it's a whole lot difficult just to define what the risks are.
Well, it certainly is. I mean, there's huge importance in today's environment to be able to share information. However, we've got a lot of, I call them hard nuts out there. These are these political and bureaucratic impediments, so to speak. And one of the key ones to start with is trust. You've got cultural challenges. You've got things related to security clearances and title authorizations and standards. And there's a strong part of me that says we've been, you know, approaching these challenges by kind of boiling the ocean. What we need to do is think a little bit more from a business perspective. Kind of, as Melissa Hathaway likes to say, is be able to, you know, take things in small chunks. You know, it's okay to think big, but let's start small and be able to scale fast. And that takes a support mechanism between government and the private sector in order to be able to do that.
If you Google Riley, R-I-L-E-Y, Repco, R-E-P-K-O, you'll stumble on a white paper, and the white paper is titled The Collaboration Imperative for Cyberspace Stakeholders. And I think I just named some of the cyberspace stakeholders right here, didn't I? It's not that long. It's maybe 8-10 pages, but it really gives a nutshell of a lot of the concerns that maybe this is a summary of your frustrations for the last 20 years.
Well, I don't want to say I'm frustrated. However,
it ain't easy.
It ain't easy. Yes, this particular domain is going to take some hard work and rolling up the sleeves. We understand that. The value here is that If a particular service or agency expects to be able to solve this problem internally by themselves, I think they're missing a huge opportunity. Okay? What I'm talking about in the paper here is that since this domain is made up of private sector constituents, so to speak, when I say that, I'm talking about not just big business, where in this town you have the defense industrial base. You've got to leverage the innovators, that small business community. You've got to leverage venture capital. They have their finger on the pulse. You got to leverage the wizards. I identify the wizards as those hackers and patriots, but they can also become your advisors. Let's not leave out the entrepreneurs and, of course, the other federal agencies and state and local. And, again, this is global. So the cost is not including that mix of talent in your decision process.
In a couple of weeks, we're going to have John Borderwine on from Symantec, and we're going to do a deep dive into mobile security. And if I work for a federal agency, I would look out and say to myself, well, geez, we may be able to do some research and find out what's going on, but Symantec has got this whole world of technology and innovation that they can tap into, and not the only vendor in town that has that information there. But it would be remiss for me if I didn't at least reach out and consider some aspects that they may be able to add to my ability to control cyber warfare.
Well, you're right. I mean, so let's talk a little bit about mobile devices. I mean, how do you manage mobility? I mean, this is a current question, and it's a challenging one. And why is it this case? Well, the bottom line is we're not talking about radios here. You know, the workforce and the government, they want to use their iPhones, they want to use their Androids or whatever type of communication device that they have. And with that comes social media, okay? And they want to do that and apply that in doing their job. But from a government perspective, there's a huge need here to kind of figure out some type of uniform architecture, you know, that allows all of the public sector participants to use their tools, but also do it in a protected manner. And that's the challenge, okay? Mm-hmm. But from my perspective, if this is the challenge, then let's reach out to the private sector and ask them, what could be a potential solution?
April 2nd of last year, they released the iPad. They sold 15 million of them last year. Now they have a new one just reaching on the streets here. And let's face it, Riley, if I come waltzing into your agency with this iPad, hi, I want to get on your network, what is policy? Is there a policy that's been in place for 2 years about a device that's been on the market for 2 weeks? There's no policy for that. So I think you have to reach out and figure out what the policy should be and could be and have to plan for the iPad 3 or you can come waltzing in with a Sanyo device that has some kind of a strange network requirement as well.
You're right. And, you know, policy is an important piece, but we're talking about technology here that depreciates like a head of lettuce that's been thrown into the fire. So think about the speeds here. All right, yes, the policy wonks, I use that term tongue-in-cheek, of course, they're there shaping the stone, okay? But there's also value in being able to hand some of that work over to the architects so they can at least start to build the first floor. This is not something where we start one phase and complete it, you know, at 100% and then start another. We've got to work these in parallel. And again, the value here is making sure that we include people from the private sector, those experts, as part of the team. They need to have a seat at the table.
And because they're not going to have any choice, it's changing so quickly. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, We're going to talk about the U.S. Comprehensive National Cybersecurity Initiative, the CNCI, and maybe compare this with some of the initiatives that the Obama administration are kind of pushing forward. I think the Obama administration has something called the Cyberspace Policy Review. There's all kinds of documents out there. I mean, all kinds of bills up on Capitol Hill now that refer to cybersecurity, but it's something that is maybe can't be solved with just one bill or even partnering with one company. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Riley Repko, the CEO of Trusted Cyber Solutions, and we're talking about public-private partnerships and cybersecurity.
The website of the week is the Google Transparency Report. Now, this site includes an interactive map, so you can click on different countries. The Chinese officials consider censorship demands to be state secrets, so we cannot disclose that information at this time. This can show traffic patterns. If a country blocks internet access, you can immediately see this. You can see if any countries are blocking internet traffic. The Google Transparency Report.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly one in three children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov. Brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
The Pentagon and Beyond. Brought to you by Airink.
Changes at the top at the Pentagon and the CIA. It's difficult to tell who will do what. But House Intelligence Committee Chairman Mike Rogers knows what he wants as far as CIA Director Leon Panetta is concerned.
I hope he stays there. I think he wants to stay there. I'm encouraging him to stay there.
And he has some advice for the president.
You may need to find another Secretary of Defense. I think Secretary Gates deserves his time. But I would not make wholesale changes in all of the national security posts all at one time.
I'm J.J. Green.
Solar activity, which causes geomagnetic storms in space, can impact everything from over-the-horizon radar, often used for aircraft and missile launches from a long distance away, to submarine detection systems, to two things we've come to rely on, our cell phones and GPS. Airink has developed a space environmental impact tool that advises, before it happens, what will be affected by bad weather in space. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Profile America, Tuesday, April 12th. On this date, 150 years ago, the bloodiest chapter in American history began when Confederate troops under the command of General P.T. Beauregard fired on Fort Sumter in the harbor at Charleston, South Carolina. The shelling began 4 years of civil war, pitting troops of the 11 Confederate states against those of the Union Army. An estimated 3 million men served on both sides. By the time fighting largely ended in April 1865, an estimated 620,000 soldiers had died in battle or of other causes. By comparison, in World War II, when the U.S. had 16 million in uniform, 400,000 died in combat or of other causes. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
I wasn't born to go with the flow. I was born to make a difference, to make waves. I want my sweat and hard work to mean something. I was born to serve in the United States Coast Guard. If you were born ready to lead, to protect, to uphold the law, then visit GoCoastGuard.com. The United States Coast Guard. Born ready.
Sponsored by the United States Coast Guard. In cooperation with the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
As gas prices rise, more focus will shift toward the administration's ambitious clean energy goals. Join FCA Bethesda and FCA Energy on May 4th at the Bethesda North Marriott for the second Energy and the Environment IT Day, featuring EPA, DOE, GSA, NRC, NOAA, and Interior to discuss energy efficiency, agency cooperation, and IT spending priorities. Register at FCABethesda.com/EEITday. Special thanks to premier sponsors Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and Booz Allen Hamilton, and platinum sponsors HP and Centurion Research Solutions.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Riley Repko, CEO of Trusted Cyber Solutions. We're kind of viewing this problem from 40,000 feet. We're talking about public-private partnerships, talking about all kinds of different things. If you pick up a newspaper, how's that sound for old-fashioned, Riley? If you pick up a newspaper, you see stories about RSA being breached. You hear stories about emails being lost from Epsilon. These are just top of mind. And a lot of people on Capitol Hill, as you mentioned earlier, putting all these bills, this bill and that bill and this bill and that bill, as if some little piece of paper on Capitol Hill is going to change things. It can't.
Well, John, we work in an environment where process trumps results. You know, everyone seems to be focused on polishing and shaping that brick. You know, it's not enough of us are thinking about, you know, how that brick is going to kind of form the first floor of something innovative. When we talk about public and private, you know, sector partnerships, the key here, it's all about the how. How are we going to get things done? What's the plan? Where are the timeline? What are the action items? I believe right now we're spending a preponderance of our time on the what. You know, we're surrounded by a lot of very smart noggins in this town. We know what the problems are. The key is how are we going to go down the path to fix them?
It's always a challenge, and that's what the U.S. Comprehensive National Cybersecurity Initiative is all about, I assume.
It is, and, you know, when you look back in one of the quotes that our current vice chairman, General Horst Cartwright, has indicated is that we have not found the balance between cybersecurity, where the chain of command does not break the chain of information. There's a ton of information out there. You want to go to a cyber conference, pick a day, pick an hour. And it's not just about the network. As you mentioned earlier, we've got 18 of these different critical infrastructures. So if you want to know about energy and utility and power, transportation, healthcare, anything that has an IP address today is vulnerable.
Is this guy's name Hoss Cartwright?
It is, General Hoss Cartwright.
And his brother's Little Joe, I assume.
I would never approach him with that.
Hoss Cartwright, what a name. agility, when it comes to software development, people are talking about agility and flexible and Scrum and extreme programming and being agile and being able to change. And I think that's what's happening with the people at RSA are being attacked, the people at Epsilon are being attacked. Sometimes it's a social engineering ploy. Sometimes it's something you can't expect. Sometimes it's malware or a combination of two. Or what's happening recently on Twitter, there is malware that's embedded in some Twitter feeds and some malicious links within Twitter. I think this is a whole thing is how do you develop agility in these big, huge buildings that are downtown?
Well, that's it. The cost is in not being responsive. And so the primary reason why I was motivated to come back into government was basically, you know, I had a vision. And it's not rocket science here, ladies and gentlemen, because if we have awareness to the certain capabilities that are out there in private sector land, and have an appreciation for not just the capabilities, but at what capacity they're lying at. And by the way, we have to have that insight in advance. Otherwise, I might as well hand you, John, the yellow pages, because yep. From an operator's perspective, that commanding general, if he's being attacked by one of those malware or whatever it might be that's been so insidious, they have to have the ability to be able to respond immediately. And that's the critical component.
The response is quick. When it comes to private companies and partnering with the government, there are some private companies that are all too willing to partner with the government, like NetWitness, the other ones out there. And there's others that maybe are more reluctant to do that for a lot of different reasons. And you would say, well, geez, your company is set up here in Arlington. I can name one that just moved out of Wilson Boulevard, moved up the road. And you're working mostly with banks. I mean, you should take the skill set and help the folks right downtown. Some people may be wary of doing that.
I mean, these are the impediments that we deal with. But, again, getting back to trust and culture, there needs to be a way that we do leverage that bell or whistle technology. You know, if they can provide some type of prevention, detection, mitigation capability, but they don't do work with the government, however, they still provide us with a solution, how do we engage them? That's what we need to think about, okay? And that, to me, is a real opportunity for us.
Last year, we had Don Nealon on from EMC. EMC is a hard company to describe because there's just so many different pieces to the puzzle. It's a kind of a federation of different companies, and they just made a move locally in the last week. They acquired NetWitness Corporation. So NetWitness was kind of a classic small security company that was agile and nimble, and just in January, they detected an attack on, I think, one of the agencies downtown. good, bad? Is it good for NetWitness, good for the government, good for citizens for this acquisition, or what's your perspective on this?
Well, I think from the point you made, it could be varied. NetWitness, I know Amit very well. I mean, they're a top-notch, super company. They've worked hard the past 5 years. You may know that NetWitness kind of spun out of Mantech.
It was a division.
And
I think Nick Lantau went with them.
That's right. They saw a vision, they saw a need, and they built a company around it. However, the challenge in today's market is a lot of these top-notch companies are all small business, by the way, get sucked up by these large companies because they also see the need. And so, you know, part of the sensitivity is as long as our community doesn't lose, you know, the capability that a NetWitness provides, I think that is one of the primary concerns.
Yeah. Creativity is difficult, I think, in large organizations. If you look at most of the startups, they're small, innovative companies. Someone has an idea, like Amit had, and worked it through. It's just it's difficult to continue that when you're wearing a three-piece suit every day and reporting to a board of directors every quarter or every year. You lose some of that innovation and the stay till 3 o'clock in the morning until it gets done.
Well, that's just it. I mean, you talk about three-piece suits. I mean, we have to be able to influence those that wear the boots, that wear the suits, that wear the sandals.
And or no shoes,
that's right. I mean, don't underestimate these wizards. These are the folks that we have to be able to convince. And the last part of the equation are the spooks, I mean, the intelligence community. This is an area where, again, many of the issues related to security, et cetera, a lot of these companies don't have the tickets to be able to talk to them. However, they may have the solution. The key is, how do you bring them closer into the mix, so to speak?
And someone in a more structured, formal environment like the Air Force, General Lord, for example, he may look at someone sitting there barefoot with headphones on and shoulder-length hair and say, how can he help me? Well, he can really, really help you there, General Lord. And I think General Lord, and this is using an example, I'm sure I've met him, he'd be very responsive to that. But there may be other people that be resistant to that cultural description of someone who's working on computers.
Well, General Bill Lord gets it.
And if
the community in Washington would spend more time attending these Black Hat and DEF CON events, I mean, this is where Jeff Moss has done a phenomenal job. I had the opportunity of going out there last August in Vegas. General Mike Hayden was there. I mean, when you walk around in a suit, you stand out. As soon as you kind of dye your hair blue, put an earring on and some black T-shirts and sandals, now you're part of the mix. But to me, the cost is in not participating in that environment. We can learn a heck of a lot.
I guess it's taking this collaboration and applying it to different areas or areas where you might feel uncomfortable. So if you got to collaborate, you got to collaborate with everyone, don't you?
You have to. You really have to. I mean, there's nothing wrong with kind of squirming in your seat today because we're talking about an adversary that's very clever. They're watching your every move. In fact, if we're not prepared, they'll always try and be one step ahead of you. Our goal is to try to be one step ahead of them.
Yeah, interesting. In the Air Force, you worked with this concept of collaboration on a grand level, and you've got some lessons learned and maybe some best practices you can share with the audience in that area.
I'd be delighted to. So I sat back and basically took a piece of paper and drew a line down the middle of it and called one side the public sector and the other side the private sector. Now, for most people, I'll say, am I going too fast for you? All right. So there's two questions that keep popping up. One is requirements. It's the companies from around the world that come into the Air Force and say, what do you need? And then the second question is from our perspective, you know, being a public servant, I ask, you know, what can you do? What type of capabilities are out there? What are the skill sets that exist? So our desire now is how do we capture those two questions? What do we need? And from our perspective, what I built was a clearinghouse, a trusted clearinghouse. All due respect to the Northrops, the Grummans, the Raytheons, this cannot be a for-profit entity. It's got to be something, quote-unquote, neutral. It becomes basically a charm bracelet to allow everyone's titanium charm to hook onto it. And that's what the concept, and basically we were able to test it in two major DOD war games.
And it worked.
It worked. It shows tremendous merit.
Good. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about critical infrastructure, talk about public-private cooperation and collaboration, and talk more about some of the successes that Riley Repko's had at the Air Force. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we're speaking with Riley Repko, CEO of Trusted Cyber Solutions.
For a America's wounded warriors, sometimes coming home can be a battle in itself. Every one of them needs our support to meet the challenges they face every day. The USO provides Americans a way to offer that support to our wounded warriors and their families. Join us. Visit USO.org to learn how you can make a difference in their lives. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
Don't miss the first annual Backgammon Beating Cancer Tourney, Saturday, February 26th, to benefit the wellness community, providers of free programs of emotional support, education, and hope for people with cancer and their loved ones. Beginners to experts are welcome. For more information, call David Ogden at 301-717-7166. For more information about the wellness community of Greater Washington, call 301-493-5002. All programs at the wellness community are provided free of charge.
The largest tax increase in American history takes place on January 1st, 2013. This is Steve Burton with Equity One inviting you to our tax-free retirement dinner seminar on Wednesday, April the 20th at 7 p.m. at the Morton Steakhouse in Tyson's Corner. Call 1-877-313-4080 to RSVP. Income and capital gains taxes are going up. Estate taxes are making a comeback. Taxes are on sale, and learn how to protect your assets. Call 1-877-313-4080 to join us on Wednesday, April the 20th at Morton Steakhouse in Tyson's Corner. You must be a homeowner and have a retirement account to attend. Call 1-877-313-4080. You can also register online at EquityOneInc.com. That's Equity, the number one, Inc.com. Call 1-877-313-4080.
Fighting sight loss. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Women who consume certain fish containing omega-3 fatty acids have a reduced risk of developing age-related macular degeneration, a condition that impairs vision. William Kristen is an epidemiologist at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston.
Fish that seem to be most closely associated with the benefit were canned tuna fish and then dark meat fish, such as mackerel, salmon, sardines, bluefish, swordfish.
Women with higher omega-3 intakes had greatly reduced the risk of macular degeneration over time.
Those women in the upper third, compared to those who were in the lower third, had about a 35 to 40% reduced risk of age-related macular degeneration over the 10 years of follow-up.
The study in Archives of Ophthalmology was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
The Susan G. Komen Global Race for the Cure is coming to D.C. Saturday, June 4th, and together we can make an impact. Whether it's just you and a friend or your whole neighborhood, start or join a team today. $28 million has already been raised and invested in local breast cancer programs in our community alone. But there's more to be done. Be a part of the global community, united against breast cancer. Register today at globalraceforthecure.org or visit WTOP.com, search cure.
Frustrated by how quickly the battery drains in your electronic devices? A new engineering innovation may one day dramatically extend the time you can stay unplugged. In electronic devices, a lot of power is drained by shuttling information to silicon memory chips. So Eric Popp, a University of Illinois engineering professor, has used carbon nanotubes 10,000 times smaller than a human hair to activate memory storage material at extremely low voltages.
We've been able to make this about 100 times more energy efficient and about 100 times faster than anything in industry today.
Popp thinks they could make it even better, but manufacturing hurdles remain.
Nobody has figured out a way to integrate them at the scale of a billion nanotubes per chip the way we do with silicon today.
But Pop believes that's only a matter of time. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Riley Repko, CEO of Trusted Cyber Solutions, talking about both sides of the road. We're talking about public and private cooperation and collaboration to solve the problem of this whole idea of cyber attacks and use collaborative techniques to do that. And before the break, we talked about your experience at the Air Force and how you got a piece of paper, drew a line down, and talked about this side of the road and that side of the road.
Well, John, You know, I sit back and say this is one of the few markets where products have not caught up with the problem. And so if that's the case, then we have an opportunity here because this domain being man-made and owned, quote-unquote, by the private sector, we've got to be able to leverage that. And so having an ability to engage the private sector and leverage the public sector was the whole purpose of this framework, this collaboration framework. We gave it the term CAFE. It became Cyber CAFE, but the term CAFE is an acronym. It stood for Collaboration Accelerant Framework for Execution. How do we reach out and, in essence, touch someone? Where are the good ideas, the leading, the bleeding-edge tools? Well, it's our belief that if you use a trusted clearinghouse in the middle, make it a 501cx, so to speak. It doesn't have to be a 3, a 6, or a 34. It could be an FFRDC, but it needs to not have a stake in the game. It can't be biased. It becomes a broker, a facilitator, an advisor, a recommender. But it has to have awareness to what's out there. It has to have its finger on the pulse to those capabilities and their capacity.
Now, I have friends who were very successful in private industry and worked for large organizations like IBM and then worked for the federal government for a while and bounced back to the private industry. And this skill set is a great skill set to have, especially to understand this. And I think that's the challenge, is having a group of core people who can understand some of the cultural barriers, some of the entry barriers, some of the jurisdictional barriers between an agency taking advantage of companies like Symantec. That's a huge, big company. Small company, NetWitness. What tool do you use? What's the 9/16 wrench and what is the jackhammer?
Right. And to me, I mean, having the opportunity to be able to serve, to be able to, in essence, bounce back and forth between the public and private sector. I mean, I enjoyed getting up every morning as a reservist when I could put my uniform on. But I immensely enjoyed the past 28 months where I had this opportunity to serve, know I was, you know, working at trying to figure out how we keep this nation safe. Well, in this domain, we've got to have the ability to, in essence, know what's out there again. And to do that, to know where these just innovative bell and whistle technologies are popping up. You know, there are capabilities that go from Boston to Austin out to Silicon Valley. This is very much a grassroots approach. Every state, the Commonwealth, for example, of Virginia, needs to know what they have in their backyard. This is the one-on-many principle. You know, you should be able to walk into a major trade association and say, how many of your companies do cyber defense or exploitation or offensive work, so to speak? Okay, how many of them are small business women-owned? They should know that. Why? Because I believe the government needs to have that awareness.
And it can be done formally or informally, but a transition, almost like an association, that's kind of a quasi... It's an unusual organization. It can't be a government organization. It can't be a private organization. It has to be supported by both. Maybe it's some kind of – there are associations in town, I think, that try to attempt to do this. I don't know if they do it or not.
They do. I mean, there are some challenges because a lot of the traditional associations, you know, if you're the big company and you put most of your annual dues into the association – chances are you pay a heck of a lot more than a lot of the small businesses can, therefore you get more of the attention. I'm thinking about a clearinghouse where it's fair game. A challenge comes in, for example, a requirement comes in from government. Let's pick the Defense Department, and they have a challenge. They have a need. This clearinghouse would have the reach, the extended reach into the private sector globally and kind of know where to turn. Now, if a certain capability does not exist, then basically you're asking the question of the world. You know, hey, guys, this is what we're facing. Who has a solution? Now, when you start to see the way innovation and the way we can respond to challenges, that's what I'm talking about here, the ability to be able to respond quickly.
I was reading online a quote from Army General Keith Alexander this morning. He's quoted March, Government Info Security. He's the director of security for NSA. He testified at a hearing. He said, I quote, "We do not have the capacity to do everything we need to accomplish this cybersecurity assist. This is the big dog. This is the guy who can see everything from 40,000 feet. There's got to be, you know, 1957, they put Sputnik up and everyone changed and said, how are we going to do this? Public-private policy, they changed and altered. I think we're almost at that point now. I think one significant attack and people are going to go, well, this is the Sputnik for 2012 or 2011.
That's right. And the last thing we want is finger pointing. John Alexander, had the chance to listen to him speak numerous times over the past 2 years. You know, he's also the commander of U.S. Cyber Command,
Ooh,
a sub-unified
he's a big dog.
Command. He's
yeah.
a big dog. And reports to U.S. Strategic Command. You know, there's that dotted line there. You've got other major agencies tied in here. From OSD, you know, from a policy perspective, you've got DISA, the network piece, you know, which is basically the government ISP agency. Yeah, there are a lot of organizational constructs, but what he's concerned about, I believe he's spot on, that he realizes that if the preponderance of intellectual capital resides with the private sector, how do we engage them? But how also do we protect our ability to not overexpose our vulnerabilities? And that's an area that we tested by sanitizing some of our challenges in the war game so we could reach out into the private sector.
Well, tell me about your experience with these war games.
Well, first off, they're large. They take a long time to produce. These are big investment areas. The first one was space-driven. It's part of a series called Schriever. They did the sixth one last May. So it was led by then Bob Kaler, who was the commander of Air Force Space Command, who's now the commander of U.S. Strategic Command. Again, that's where U.S. Cyber Command is a sub-unified command that goes underneath that. And I apologize for all the acronyms here.
Well, my listeners will know.
However, when you look at what the opportunity was, here you have an environment that's always been space-driven. Now General Kaler wanted to incorporate the cyber mix. Well, you know, when you start talking and thinking about satellites and ground stations, anything that's tied to an IP address has some vulnerabilities. The value here is if you can look at, and again, these war games were conducted in epic years, 12 years from now. So part of my concern was, you know, I was worried that, you know, some of us in government couldn't think 12 minutes from now. But how do we now leverage the private sector, all those communities that I've referenced during the war game? Well, our little cell showed up to first test the process. And I basically was the quarterback for our little group, which meant I had to have awareness, a catalog, so to speak, of what types of companies and what type of capabilities they could provide in advance. So I was Drew Brees. You know, I had the chance to look at the defensive line. When the challenge came in, I looked at my sleeve and said, do we have a solution? And if we didn't, then we were able to ask additional questions. But how we did it was to leverage a cyber cloud of big and small businesses, labs and universities, entrepreneurs, hackers, again, hackers that were on our side globally.
Ethical hacking is a brave new world for a lot of people. You know, at Georgetown University, they have a master's program there, and you can't graduate without taking a course in ethics. Isn't that kind of a strange twist to the world of IT?
It is, and again, we have to get beyond the trust piece. Trust is an inherent impediment that we have to realize. But as we start to engage these communities over and over again, we start to build a level of trust and confidence. And so the value here is, as the military operator is facing some challenges in cyber, the key is, my belief is that we need to have a representative from the various communities of interest from the private sector at the table. And as the challenge changes, so do the participants around the table. This is a very dynamic domain.
So what about funding for some clearinghouse like this? I mean, that would be the challenge, I would think.
Well, it is. You know, I received tremendous support from the Air Force to be able to put meat on the bones of this capability. But right now, you know, one of the key areas I've talked about is, since we're talking about shared risk and shared vulnerability, why not some type of shared investment? I mean, the challenges that the public sector faces, so does the private sector. What we need to figure out is, I'm interested in seeing, couldn't that pot of money be managed by this clearinghouse? I mean, how difficult would it be to award, reward, and incentivize participation? Yes, let's get the legal beagles involved, get the contracts folks involved, but make those folks the mix from the public and private sector so we can look at alternatives.
We're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, talk a little more about public-private cooperation. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we are speaking with Riley Repko, CEO of Trusted Cyber Solutions.
I wasn't born to go with the flow. I was born to make a difference, to make waves. I want my sweat and hard work to mean something. I was born to serve in the United States Coast Guard. If you were born ready to lead, to protect, to uphold the law, then visit GoCoastGuard.com.
The United States Coast Guard. Born ready.
Sponsored by the United States Coast Guard. In cooperation with the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Here's what you can do to help stop the flu. Cough or sneeze into your sleeve, not your hands. Wash your hands often with soap and water or alcohol-based hand sanitizers. You should avoid touching your eyes, nose, or mouth. Germs spread that way. Stay home if you're sick and get a seasonal flu shot. For more on flu prevention and seasonal flu shot locations offered by Adventist Healthcare, go to HelpStopTheFlu.com. That's HelpStopTheFlu.com.
In partnership with WTOP Radio, a Bonneville station, together making a difference in Washington.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C., Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by ARINC.
Changes at the top at the Pentagon and the CIA. It's difficult to tell who will do what, but House Intelligence Committee Chairman Mike Rogers knows what he wants as far as CIA Director Leon Panetta is concerned.
I hope he stays there. I think he wants to stay there. I'm encouraging him to stay there.
And he has some advice for the president.
You may need to find another Secretary of Defense. I think Secretary Gates deserves his time, but I would not make wholesale changes in all of the national security posts all at one time.
I'm J.J. Green.
Solar activity, which causes geomagnetic storms in space, can impact everything from over-the-horizon radar, often used for aircraft and missile launches from a long distance away, to submarine detection systems, to two things we've come to rely on, our cell phones and GPS. ARINC has developed a space environmental impact tool that advises, before it happens, what will be affected by bad weather in space. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Profile America, Tuesday, April 12th. On this date, 150 years ago, the bloodiest chapter in American history began when Confederate troops under the command of General P.T. Beauregard fired on Fort Sumter in the harbor at Charleston, South Carolina. The shelling began 4 years of civil war, pitting troops of the 11 Confederate states against those of the Union Army. An estimated 3 million men served on both sides. By the time fighting largely ended in April 1865, an estimated 620,000 soldiers had died in battle or of other causes. By comparison, in World War II, when the U.S. had 16 million in uniform, 400,000 died in combat or of other causes. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Cybersecurity runs deeper than information assurance. It includes mobile security, cyber innovations, forensics, collaboration. That's why last month the Defense Department increased its cyber budget request by nearly $1 billion. And it's why DHS is taking unprecedented steps to assume responsibility government-wide. Join FCA Bethesda on April 29th at the Bethesda North Marriott for its executive breakfast on the latest developments in mission-critical cybersecurity. For speaker lineup and to register, visit FCABethesda.com.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Riley Repko, the CEO of Trusted Cyber Solutions. We're talking about everything today. We're talking about public-private partnerships, trying to solve the problem of cybersecurity, and talked in and out about all kinds of different things. Riley's a background both in the private industry and working for the Air Force and been in the Air Force and has all kinds of different fun experiences. Born in Asia and, like a typical Air Force person, been everywhere and a lot of accomplishments. What I want to do is I want to do up close and personal here in the final block of the show. Just ask some questions. Maybe my listeners are listening to you going, "Now, what's he all about?" So here's the first question you have. Your desktop computer, Mac or Windows?
Windows.
Okay. Notebook computer. Do you have a notebook computer to carry it around? What kind, Mac or Windows?
I have a notebook computer. I don't carry it around, and it's a Windows.
Interesting. Cell phone. Feature phone or smartphone?
Smartphone.
Okay. What flavor?
Droid.
A Droid. Well, well, well. 25% of all apps for the Droid are malware infested. You know that.
Thanks for sharing.
A tablet, iPad, skinny.
iPad,
you got a skinny
iPad.
One or a fat one?
I got the fat one. I'm
you got the
old,
fat one.
The old boy here.
Okay. And a LinkedIn profile, do you have that?
Just started. Okay. And in my 3 weeks now back in the private sector, I now have close to 300 participants. I don't know if that's good or bad, but new
good.
Kid there.
Facebook?
No, don't do Facebook.
I don't either. Twitter activity?
Nope, don't know how.
Okay, well, just social networking type questions. And the year of your first computer, when did you buy or make or steal your first computer?
I didn't steal it, but...
I have to ask.
It's all about ethics and integrity. Probably, I had one of the old Macs, those square ones, so that was probably in the early 80s.
Wow, early really?
80s. Yeah, yeah. Well,
that's a classic one. A couple of silly questions here. How many email addresses do you have?
That work two now. Two.
Okay, that's good. And finally, the most important question for Washington, D.C., win-loss record for the Redskins next season. If they play, talk to me. What's it going to be?
If they play, okay. I think we can do better than 500. So let's think a little bit better. Let's think 700.
Oh, right. So Shanahan may have some success here.
I hope so.
Well, that's the important part of the show. Now back to the boring computer stuff. We've talked on and on about public-private partnerships and this thing called a clearinghouse, which you think is a pretty good idea to get information from all kinds of different aspects of it. The GAO came out with a report, as you know, in February and talked about federal IT security being at high risk. Are these people just, you know, are they crying wolf? Are they just trying to get funding? Or are they serious about this? You know, we talked about General Alexander. We have Gregory Wilshison, I think as you pronounce his name. Are they serious about this? Or how bad is it? I mean, is the car falling apart? Or is it brand new? Or is it about to fall apart?
Well, the key here is we need to be serious about, in essence, cyber warfare, cyber defense. We need to understand it because, candidly, these adversaries are no longer, you know, going after and taking a dollar out of your credit cards, because we're dealing with some very clever adversaries. And so we need to get serious about it. And the only way we're going to be able to do that is start participating more actively with the private sector, with the various communities that are putting a lot of time, energy, and insight. You know, the small business community, my hat is off to their capabilities, so we need to leverage that. Let's not exclude what we have right here in our backyard, these academic institutions, these research labs that are doing tremendous work. The key here is now, how can we leverage these various communities of interest? Funding is always going to be a challenge, but from my perspective, the cost is not putting it into these areas. However, it would help to have a plan, all right? Having spent so many years in business, if you can come in with a comprehensive plan and say, these are my first steps, here's what I need to accomplish, here's what I need to do what, okay? The key here is how we're going to do it, and that's what really drives this public-private partnership.
In your white paper, you talk about jurisdictional barriers to accomplishing some of these tasks. Can you maybe expand on that a little?
Well, I mean, some of the barriers I talked about earlier, and a lot of them are very subjective in nature. I mean, we've got some title authorities, which is basically, when you look at within government, the ability to be able to respond to an attack. You've got barriers related to security clearances. A lot of the capabilities that these companies provide, these companies don't have the security clearances to even interface with the need. So how do we get around that? You know, how can we, in essence, sanitize our need to leverage those capabilities?
Well, that's got to be a challenge. You know, in the commercial world, if I work on a large-scale data collection projects, I have to sign an NDA. Okay. Now, this guy, General Keith Alexander, can you imagine the NDA he wants me to sign? I'm have to leave my pinky with him or something. I mean, this is a lot more serious in the commercial world.
It's very serious. But again, these are the various hurdles. I didn't say this was going to be easy. All right. And we can, you know, we can make that that wall as high as we'd like. You know, part of the opportunity here is if there's a way in which we can leverage and have awareness to the capabilities that are out there and have that liaison who understands what the operation requirement is, but also has a pretty good idea what you're bringing to the table to say, I like what I see out of this small business or out of this university, and say, come in a little closer. Okay. The sensitivity here is anonymizing things, you know, so as not to overexpose. Now, from a small business perspective and from universities, et cetera, the private sector is also very worried about their intellectual property. My thought process in this clearinghouse approach is we can protect every single input and treat them as separate files. It's not rocket science, okay? The value here is how do I get that good idea or that solution to the General Alexander so that they can operationally respond?
And that's really the challenge, that an intermediary who can protect the classified information to allow the next step to take place or to filter it. It's almost like an HR person screening a candidate for a job and not necessarily describing all the activities, but trying to find out for a competency in a general area of security, of managing a firewall, of managing rapidly changing malware.
And it is rapidly changing. I mean, as I mentioned, this is a very dynamic environment. You know, tech tools that are here today are gone tomorrow. I've had the opportunity of speaking to numerous private equity and venture capital companies. You know, they come in saying, Riley, you've got these companies out there. You know, how do we bundle them together and tie them into a traditional structure so that, you know, we can leverage current government contracts? Well, here's my concern. Okay, the domain is changing. The adversary is changing. It's like a chameleon. Okay. Do you really want to package a handful of companies that are current today that may not be current tomorrow? All right. Let's start thinking, you know, non-traditionally. Okay. We're dealing with an asymmetric adversary, and we have to be able to respond accordingly.
You know, the historians all remember the Maginot Line in Europe, and they built that fine, fine line that would defend against everything except the guy who went around it. And we may have we'll put up an RFP for antivirus software or anti-malware software. And wait a minute, that sounds like a joke. I mean, how would you even know what's gonna happen? Who would have predicted a Twitter 6-8 years ago? No one predicted Twitter. Now there's Twitter attacks. You can't predict that.
Right. And you know, you talk about Twitter. We talk about WikiLeaks. You know, government realizes that, you know, we had an insider threat incident. Okay. Does that mean we shut down all collaboration? On the contrary, you know, we must always be willing to share information. But there was some goodness that I believe came out of that that challenge with WikiLeaks. It sensitized or heightened our sensitivity, so we can now look at, you know, where do we need to apply some of the more stringent rules? You know, again, rules not to slow us down, but rules definitely to be there to protect our information, and that's key. You know, we have to learn how we can protect our information on the perimeter, but we also have to be responsive, and that's the balance.
You have a startup company here, Trusted Cyber Solutions. Where do you see yourself going in the next 4 to 5 years, Riley?
Well, hopefully to the moon. yeah, part of the opportunity here is I want to be able to leverage, in essence, the wargaming piece, okay, putting some actual assessment capabilities when I can walk into a financial firm or to a utility and say, hey, Mr. or Mrs. CEO, you know, it's pretty lonely sitting at the top. All right. I understand you've got some major liabilities. Well, if we were able to use our catalog, our capability, and say, let us test, you know, give us a scenario and let us test you out. You can now watch your security advisors or your CISOs respond to a particular challenge. You can start to see where your vulnerabilities may be, and then we can reconstitute. We can come in and provide you with some state-of-the-art solutions. That's where I see a huge opportunity, and that's where I'm placing my focus.
Today we spoke with Riley Repko, the CEO of Trusted Cyber Solutions. Thanks for coming in, Riley.
John, thank you very much for your time.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.